there's this, you know, horrible, horrible event between two of David's children, between Amnon and Tamar. And David, you know, it's a complicated story. And I myself was very conflicted about how to think about his role. You know, on the one hand, sending her in there seems like a really big mistake. And all of the imagery that we had of the Yosef story and Yaakov sending Yosef, you know, to the brothers and Shechem, and, you know, how could he possibly have done that in the whole tradition of rabbinic literature about, you know, sending him from the valley of Chevron, Vayishlacheinu Me'emek Chevron, as opposed to Chevron, which, as you know, is in the Judean Mountains, was sort of a reference to the blindness that that took. You know, and that was one thing. And then the second thing, is, as we'll, you know, start with this evening, is the fact that, you know, there's no response to it, that David doesn't say anything to Amnon about it at all. He's just very upset. So, you know, on the one hand, you know, that seems unforgivable because this is going to be an open wound and it's just going to fester. And, you know, obviously tonight we're going to talk about just how bad it gets. But on the other hand, part of what my mother was pointing out last week, like, what was he going to say? What was he going to say after Bathsheba? You know, do as I say, not as I do. It was a really hard spot. And I even mentioned in the context of sending her in, I mean, it sounds crazy in retrospect, but at the time, all he knows is Amnon. It's his eldest son. It's his putative heir, right? It's his bechor. And, you know, last we saw David, he had a child on death's door, and the child did die. So the child, in this case, you know, he's obviously grown, or more grown, certainly than a little infant was. But he's saying, you know, this is what I need. And David says, okay. So he's a traumatized father also. And I think it's just part of the idea that we tried to develop last week, that sin kind of ensnares a person. And David's reaction in both senses, both sending Tamar in and then his otherwise inexplicable silence in the face of Amnon doing, you know, something unspeakable to his sister, that's, I think, the product of the sin with Bathsheba. And it's sort of how sin becomes its own punishment in a certain sense. So that's part of what we discussed last week. Okay, so now let's just do a drop of review and then we'll go further in the text. Okay, so the first source here is just where we ended. V'amelech David shama et kol advarim ha'ele v'yichar lo me'od. He was very angry. V'lo diber Avshalom yimamnon le'meira ve'atov. Avshalom went into radio silence. He's Tamar's sister. Ki sanei Avshalom et Amnon al devar asher ina Tamar achoto. He hated him. He wouldn't even talk to him. We talked it last week about the reference. V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. That the brothers couldn't speak peaceably to Yosef. The Malbim notes, Hamelech David chara lo ma'od, ulam lo hochicho al zeh. He did not remonstrate with him. V'chol zeh orer sinat Avshalom. And Avshalom grew in his rage because his father was unwilling to say anything about it. And that made Avshalom that much more furious that his father would remain silent in the face of this kind of a provocation. Okay, so now let us continue on. Vayilishnatayim yamin, 2 years later, Avshalom for 2 years did not say anything. It's interesting, the Talmud Yerushalmi in Sota says that Amnon, you know, was studying Torah, you know, during that time, and, you know, that's why he was granted another 2 years before, you know, justice was served. But Avshalom spends the next 2 years, you know, as we'll see, perhaps plotting. Vayu goes to Zimla Avshalom b'bal chatzor asherim Ephraim. So Avshalom was getting ready to shear his sheep. Vayikrav Shalom l'chol b'nei hamelech. Now, please pay attention. Daniel, one of the interesting things here is that in this section of the chapter, he is almost unfailingly, with two exceptions, hamelech, he is not David. He is just hamelech. And I want to talk about that. So vayavo Avshalom el hamelech vayomer, hineina gozizim la'avdecha yelechna hamelech vavadavim avdecha. So he says, why don't you come with me? Why doesn't the king come with me to the shearing party. It was customary in their times when they would shear their sheep. That was like the, you know, year-end bonus. They would make a, you know, a feast. So he asks the melech to come. Vayomer ha-melech alav shalom. Al bini, al na, you know, no thanks. Nelech kulanu, nelech bad alecha. It'll be a nuisance to you. Vayifrotz bo. V'loav al alecha vayivarcheyu. Okay, so his father doesn't want to come. And the father gives him his blessing, and that's it. Vayomer Avshalom v'lo yilechna itanu Amnon achi. But won't you, if you're not going to go yourself, Hamelech, and you won't send, you know, all the other Bnei Hamelech, will you at least send Amnon? Vayomer lo Hamelech, lama yilechimach? Why should he go with you? Vayifrotz bo Avshalom, but Avshalom was insistent. Vayishlach ito et Amnon. So now the Melech sends Amnon. Ve'et kol b'nei ha-melech, but he also sends all of the other sons of the king, meaning he won't send Amnon alone. Let us pause. Thoughts. Who is suspicious that David is suspicious? Yeah, Naomi's suspicious. I'm suspicious too. Eva's suspicious. Emphatically so. All right, go ahead, Eva.
Another voice to protect the brother, I think.
Yeah. He's not sending Amnon alone. Last time he sent somebody, it didn't work out too well, right? That was sending Tamar. At least this time nobody's asking for any potato pancakes. But still, you get the impression here that David doesn't know quite what to do, but he's not going to send Amnon alone. And if we're thinking through this together, what might David's thought be? If Avshalom has something planned, he's not going to do this in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So that might be what David is thinking. Now, what's interesting about this is when you start to think it through, if somebody is prepared to kill their brother, if Avshalom is prepared to kill Amnon, avenging his sister, is it going to make a difference that anybody's there? It's sort of like it sounds good on paper, like, oh, we'll send these other people. But is that really going to be a deterrent? It's only a deterrent to have other people around if, you know, the guy who's the putative murderer is scared of getting caught. But it's not like anybody would be left wondering, oh, who did this?
Rabbi Friedman, originally he asked David to come. So what was his original plan?
Yeah. So a lot of the Mephoreshim discuss it, and they assume that he knew David would say no. But David would feel guilty for saying no. And that he'd have a better chance of getting him. Remember, he only asks for Amnon after everybody else. All of the Bnei HaMelech, then he asks David, and then he asks for Amnon.
Does he in any way think he's like Reuven and Shimon and all the brothers? Were they conspired against Yosef?
Right. It does come to mind, right? Especially because they know they're in the Har Ephraim area. It's not too far from Shechem. Yeah, I was thinking along similar lines, Effie. So, you know, David ends up sending Amnon just as he sent Tamar. It's really hard. Okay, so let's go on a little bit. Let's see how this develops. Okay. Vayitzav Avshalom et Ne'arav Lemor, Re'una, right, this is now fast-forwarding to the shearing feast. Ketov Lev Amnon Bayayin, Ve'amarti Aleichem Haku Ad Amnon Vavitem Oto. So Avshalom tells his, you know, Ne'arim, you know, when you see that Amnon is a little tipsy from the feast, kill him, and, you know, don't be nervous that you're killing the crown prince. You know, that's the kind of thing that would make somebody nervous. Al tirau haloki anochi tivisi eschem chizku ve'yuliv nechayel. Do it for me. Vayasu narei Avshalom la'amnon kasher tziva Avshalom. Vayakumu kol ha'bnei ha'melech. Vayirkevu ish al pirdo vayanusu. So what happens when they're all sitting around the feast and Avshalom's ne'arim come and kill Amnon? What does everybody do? They run away. Why do they run away?
They're afraid of their own lives.
Yeah, they don't want to die. So, you know, when you start to think about it, even though, like, in the moment, you could kind of see what David was thinking in terms of sending everybody else there, maybe hoping somehow that their presence would be a deterrent, maybe hoping somehow that, I don't know, that they would be able to defend Amnon. But when you think about it in retrospect, it seems like it played out the most likely way it would play out, that everybody's just totally shocked. Nobody knows what to think. And they just run for their lives. They literally just run for their lives. Nobody even thought to defend Amnon because it was over before it started. Okay. Back to the text.
Rabbi, earlier yeah. in the text, the word vayifrots is used a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you translated it as insistent.
Right.
But the word parats, like parrots, it also means to break out.
Right, to break through.
To break through.
To push through the boundary. So vayifrots bo is to sort of push up against the boundaries.
So I'm just wondering if, you know, if it's an illusion. A foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's interesting also in the context, because the whole story of Peretz, you know, that goes back to Yehuda and Tamar last week.
Right.
It talks about when Yehuda was going to shear his sheep. Yeah, very important. Very important. Vehi hema vaderech. So the sons of the Melech are fleeing. Vehashmua ba'ad el David. This is one of two places that he's actually David. Lemor. Hikav shalom mikol b'nei ha-melech v'lo notar mehem echad. So, the first report that comes back to David is that all of his sons are dead. So, the first impression that he has is he has literally sent not only Amnon, but all of his sons to their death. Vayakom ha-melech v'yikrad begadav v'yishkav arza. That's a familiar scene. Remember, that's exactly what David was doing when his infant son from Bathsheba, the first one, was sick. It's just this horrible scene where David is under the impression that they are all dead. Vayan Yonadav ben Shimachi David. Remember, it was Yonadav's idea that started this whole thing, where he's the one that told Amnon to feign the illness. Vayomer al yomar Adoni et kol ha'nearim b'nei ha'melech chemitu. Don't think that all of them are dead. Ki Amnon levado meit, ki al pi Avshalom haita suma miyom anoto et tamar achoto, ve'atal yasem Adoni ha'melech alibo davar limor. So Yonadav reappears into the story for just a moment, and he tells David, there's no way, everybody's dead. It must be that only Amnon is dead, because after all, Avshalom really had it out for him after, well, you know, Amnon, you know, did what he did to Tamar. You know, so in the realm of shamelessness, this is pretty high. That Yonadav, who gave Amnon this idea to begin with, would have the gall to pipe up at this point and say, nah, I don't think he would have killed everybody. He probably just killed Amnon, you know, because Amnon had it coming after the whole Tamar story. It's kind of amazing, but that's what he says. Vayivrach Avshalom, so there was a lookout, and the lookout sees, pay attention, the lookout will be very important later on in the Avshalom story. Avshalom runs away, And there's a lookout who sees, and there's many people coming from the opposite direction. He says, look, I was right. Look at me, look at me, look at me. I was right. They're all alive. Look at me. And they start crying. And they weep over this dastardly murder. That's his maternal grandfather. Very ambiguous expression. Now, clearly, the literal interpretation is that David was mourning for Amnon. But that expression, Vayitabel al beno kol hayamim, is deliberately ambiguous, because now that Absalom has run away, and this is going to be a major part of the story, David is mitabel al beno. So that's also an allusion to Absalom. Absalom barach vayelach geshur. A lot of the Mefarshim note that he sort of now locked himself within the city. He thought that David would come after him. Vayisham shalosh shanim, 3 years. Vatechal David HaMelech latzeit el Avshalom, ki nicham al Amnon ki imed. After 3 years, you know, David begins emotionally to move on. Okay. So let's try to think a little bit together about David's role in this. Again, to pose some of the questions that we talked about last week. Could David have done something differently? Should he have done something differently? If so, what was it? Let's discuss. How many people here think that David is to blame for the murder of Amnon? That he bears responsibility.
Those are two different questions.
So, as they would say in the Talmud, Chasurei Machzor V'Hachik Tani. What I meant to say is, does anybody believe that he bears at least some responsibility? I don't think anybody would say that he bears primary responsibility. I think you'd have to say. Okay, so Ava, go ahead. So what? Hold on, I heard part of that. So I know that you're taking the position that David is at least partly to blame, but go ahead. What do you think was his biggest mistake?
Should have chastised him for what he had done.
Yeah. Okay.
Just let him get away with that.
Right. So he lets him get away with it. Absalom grows in fury, plots for a number of years, and this whole time David doesn't do anything. Okay. So Eva takes a really interesting position, which is that the biggest sin is not necessarily sending Amnon out, you know, to the shearing party. But the biggest sin is having 2 years to deal with it and doing nothing. Because at any point during those 2 years, he could have addressed the issue to the point where this could have been prevented. Okay. That's, I think, very important perspective. Okay, Ruthie, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask. No, I didn't think that he took the total blame, obviously, because Avshalom still executed. But does anyone suggest, perhaps, that when he asked David to join him, that he was kind of initiating a conversation in the hopes that his father could show a different side of himself?
Not that I saw. None of the classical Mefarshim take that point of view. They all think that it's a setup, that he knows he's going to say no, but that David, out of guilt, will then be more likely to send Amnon. But that's an interesting idea. And maybe he was trying. It's interesting. Okay. So Eva is critical. Anybody else critical? Anybody else think that David is to blame here? When I say to blame, I only mean in part.
Would it be expected that Amnon would be there anyway?
No.
it's just Avshalom's sharing party.
Yeah. I wouldn't say it's as strange as sending Tamar in, let's say, you know, with the potato pancakes, but it never would have happened unless it was on the king's orders. And I want to come back to that point. Because remember, David is described almost universally through this section of the chapter as HaMelech, 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 HaMelech. You can already see that I believe that that's an implicit criticism.
Do these sharing parties often have brothers and family attend, and that was not expected because there was a rift between them? Or would the brothers not have been invited normally anyway?
It seems like it really would have just been Avshalom and his immediate crew. Remember, the instinct is for David not to go, for the brothers not to go. Okay. Just to play the other side, to try to play this down the middle. Anybody think that David acted reasonably throughout? Is sending Amnon in any way defensible? Well, if nobody's going to take the position, I'll just, again, you know, I think that David is to blame here, but I will take the position. There is a scenario where, again, David thinks, let's go back to Yosef and the brothers, that maybe this is an opportunity for some mending fences. Lechna re'e eshlom achecha v'eshlom hatzon v'ashiveni davar. Right? When he sends Yosef, right, the idea is that Yosef is going to, hopefully, Yaakov was thinking, go to the brothers and maybe they'll have a good time together. And it's been a few years. And, maybe something good will come of it. Anybody open to that as a possibility? Especially if he sends the other brothers. Maybe he wasn't hoping the other brothers would protect him, but, at least that, right? It's an opportunity for some bonding. Nobody even would give David that credit.
I would.
Okay, so Abby's open to that, right?
I said it before.
Go ahead.
No, I said it before. It sounds similar to Yaakov sending Yosef out, except it's the sending one out to the many versus sending the many to the one.
Right. So, that it didn't work out, but you could sort of see where he was coming from. And in retrospect, maybe a little bit naive, but hoping that they kind of work it out. Change of scenery. Everybody likes to shear a few sheep. I'm just guessing.
Party time.
Right.
Maybe he's trying to get David to act like to be a king. He's challenging him to be a king and stand up and do the action of a leader. And when David refuses, Avshalom takes things in his own hands.
Yeah, so I think that's what Ruthie, that's what you were trying to say before, right? That this was Avshalom's last attempt at, he had made up his mind, if nothing happens now, then I will take this into my own hands. Is that what you were trying to say before?
Yeah, but yeah. I was just being a little bit more optimistic that perhaps, despite the anger and resentment that Avshalom had, maybe he wanted to give his father another chance.
Yeah, yeah. So that's I think my mom is also trying to drive at that point, is that maybe Avshalom had not fully made up his mind. Now, again, for me, this is devil's advocate. I believe that Avshalom knew that he was going to do this the moment he saw his sister 2 years before. personally, I'm convinced that Absalom was an extremely disciplined individual. He waited the requisite amount of time to be able to create some plausible deniability, 2 years. He didn't speak to Amnon a word during that time. He's very intense about what happened. And I believe that the reason that that word, Hamelech, Hamelech, Hamelech is used, is that instead of acting the Melech, unfortunately, David was missing opportunity after opportunity to get his own house in order.
You use the word deniability. How could Hashem have deniability?
Well, if you wait 2 days and then he said, can Amnon come on a trip with me? I think people would have assumed that there was violence.
But he ordered his servants. They're going to say he didn't order me?
Oh, no. I think in the end, of course, Absalom. No. When I say deniability, I mean in just in terms of the plot, in terms of getting Amnon into a danger zone. But Effie, now I want to turn back to that point. I want to turn back to that point because I think it's really interesting. And that was going to be the final question that I raised tonight. But Effie, since you already hit it, let me go there right now. Why do you think that Absalom, who clearly hates Amnon, why do you think that Absalom doesn't kill him himself? He was an easy target. He was drunk, kind of unsuspecting.
What does he gain by doing that?
Vengeance.
No, he got it.
You're saying it feels just as good to have your Ne'arim do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good thing none of us have personal experience with this.
No, but it's the same thing that David did. David didn't kill Uriah.
Yeah,
he put him in a position to be killed.
Mm. Now, that is an interesting symmetry. Fascinating, Naomi. Was anybody surprised when they read that it was the Ne'arim that did it and not Absalom?
I would have thought Absalom would have done it. I would think if you're really angry at somebody, then you would really want to get it all out. And like if you do it yourself, then, you know, it's a personal thing. And I just, it seems more direct. So I would have assumed that he would have done it himself.
Well, you know.
I agree with you, Ruth.
It seems like you're convinced that Absalom is a total sociopath who would just as well kill him himself.
Do you have to be a sociopath to do that, or just, you know?
I don't know. A lot of people seem to be killing in this time.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the parallel story in Bereishit, you know, with the brothers and Yosef, there's the advantage there to having a number of brothers, so each of them can play a role. You know, one brother says, sell him into slavery, another says, kill him. You know, so these various fantasies that people have, you know, can be represented by these different characters in the story. And, you know, of course, we take it to be literally true that these were real people. But if you look at the story from a literary and psychological perspective, you know, Reuven plays out one fantasy, Yehuda plays out another, Shimon and Levi another. So who's to say that Absalom, who's just one person, didn't have, you know, many different ambivalent feelings?
Okay, so speaking of having different agendas, I think there is one concrete advantage for Absalom of having the Ne'arim do it.
If he has designs on kingship, is it better to have subordinates?
I think so. I think.
And also, that it wasn't an attack out of that minute thing, but that it was well planned.
And
it wasn't just a fit of fury, so in a way it makes him more like someone in control.
Okay, so Eva, I think that's very important. And I think that Avshalom has done something very smart. Where does the text end? After 3 years. Now, again, it's not 3 days. It's not 3 weeks. It's not 3 months. It's not 1 year. But 3 years. So the narrative says that David begins to kind of move past the death of Amnon. And you can already see the seeds of what's going to happen and what we'll start to talk about next week, where, okay, we bring Avshalom back into the fold. Now, if you want to be able to bring Avshalom back into the fold, if he wants to be able to come back, it's probably better not to have killed Amnon himself. David can again, imagine to himself, who knows, maybe one of the Na'arim went too far, maybe the Na'arim weren't really told to do this, maybe they were kind of acting on their own, you know, maybe they thought this is what Avshalom wanted. People can tell themselves all kinds of things. People can tell themselves all kinds of things. I think that Avshalom has demonstrated that he's capable of playing the long game. Not everybody can do that. Some people are impulsive. You know, my father was referencing Reuven, right? That was Yaakov's big critique of Reuven. You can't be the heir because Pachas Kamayim Al Tosar. You are impetuous. You are impulsive. But Avshalom has demonstrated that he is capable of playing the long game. 2 years he waited. 3 years he'll wait out some more. And if he can come back saying, okay, some bad stuff happened, my involvement is clear, but, you know, I didn't do it myself. So morally, there's not a great difference, obviously. But in terms of leaving the door open for the long term, I think it is very different whether or not he's the one that actually killed him. So it seems to me very carefully calibrated. I'll tell you another thing. The escape plan also seems to make a lot of sense. Right? Remember, Avshalom's mother was a convert. We talked about that last week, right? Eshes Yefas Tor from Geshur. So it seems like he's really thought through, right, what he's going to do, where he's going to go. He doesn't necessarily know how long, but he's willing to do this, wait it out, and see what the next move is. And in that respect, you know, Avshalom is, I think, demonstrating himself to be a very, very calculating person. Very calculating person. One final detail, wanted to get to this before, but we ended up getting to the question of the Na'arim, because Effie had raised the issue. What about Tamar? I believe that Avshalom thought through this dimension as well. Okay, let's go back for a second. Tamar is now living in the palace. Amnon is dead and has been killed by Avshalom, by his Na'arim. Avshalom has premeditated all of this for 2 years. What is Tamar's position in the palace? What does Avshalom have to at least take into account before launching this plan? Remember, he's doing this out of loyalty to his sister. What does he not want to happen?
Would it turn against him?
I think that he has to do this in such a way that she cannot be in any way suspected of collaboration. So he does it nowhere near the palace. He gives David nobody to blame but himself, because he's able to do this in such a way that David is the one that sent Amnon. And most importantly, if you think back to last week, what does he tell Tamar when she's walking around screaming? He says, don't say anything. Don't say anything. And so Avshalom has created a scenario in which he can avenge his sister without having anyone have grounds to suspect that his sister was complicit in the murder of Amnon. It's far away. David knows exactly how Amnon got there. He sent him. Tamar hasn't said a word about this for years. Avshalom forbade her from speaking of it. And so Avshalom, it strikes me, has done this in a way that not only settles the score, but protects Tamar from any suspicion going forward. Any suspicion of complicity or collaboration in the murder of Amnon. So again, he strikes us as this, you know, he's capable of great violence. But I see him as a controlled figure. Thoughtful, thought out, and therefore all the more dangerous. All the more dangerous. Okay, any thoughts on the Tamar angle? Any thoughts on Tamar's position going forward in the palace as object of suspicion or not? So everybody's convinced that she will not be held responsible. Okay, that means Avshalom has done his job. And he's done it well. Okay. So now the stage is set post 3 years for Avshalom to slowly make his way onto the scene, back onto the scene. Amnon is dead. Avshalom did it, but he didn't do it, at least not directly. Tamar is not suspected of anything. I'll leave you with a thought. The Abravanel mentions it. The Abravanel suggests that Tamar began to lobby David to let Avshalom back in. You know, time has passed, which seems to me a clear indication that she was in good graces, that she was not perceived in any way as complicit in any of this. I think it's a really fascinating angle. Okay. So, in conclusion for tonight, the Melech is acting as anything but. Everybody's acting all around him. He doesn't seem to be able to get ahead of events. Events seem to be chasing him, dictating everything around him. And that becomes, obviously, a very significant problem going forward for David. Okay, so God willing, what we'll take a look at next week is the aftermath, of the murder of Amnon 3 years on. And like I say, the slow but certain reintroduction of Avshalom onto the scene.
But what about Tamar?